Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Parker, and I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer support to our speakers. I'm also joined by Commercial Manager of Food Safety and Supply Chain, Chris Reno. Chris joined PJRFSI in January of 2022 and has over 20 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail sector. So with that, let's hand it over to Chris.
Yeah, thanks, Parker. So today we're doing episode 3 in our series, Safe Food and Roots Culture Series. Our distinguished speaker today is going to be Jennifer Crandall, CEO of Safe Food and Roots. So Jennifer, if you wouldn't mind just doing a really quick introduction, and then we can jump right into the presentation. I will jump back in when we get to the polls, so I'll always be here in the background for support.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Parker and Chris. Appreciate it. And thank you to the audience for being here. Super excited to finish out our fall series of food safety culture series. I guess we started in the summer. So the fall one is here, how software helps your food safety culture. The first one that we did, as you see, was about 5 ways GFSI can help build food safety culture, and then 10 ways. In August, we talked about 10 ways to develop food safety culture, and that was more outside and more broad. So if you missed those, I know you can go on the Perry Johnson Registrar's page and find the previous recordings of those if you missed them. And then if you didn't miss them, then I hope that you got a lot out of them, and we will jump right into the software here in a few minutes. For those that are joining that I've never encountered. So just so that you have a little bit of historical background of me, I have a food science degree from Purdue University and have spent the last 25 years in the food industry becoming an expert on what I would say mostly supplier compliance management processes and the food safety processes that support it and are helpful for retailers and wholesalers. Just over half of my career has been at the corporate offices of Kroger, helping them with their food safety compliance of their private label sector of vendors. And in 2018, I veered away from corporate life and founded Safe Food and Root, which is a food safety consulting agency, making corporate level food safety programs accessible to small and medium-sized businesses. I've done several webinars. I was recently reviewing all of the webinars and different activities that I've done. And over the last 3 or 4 years, I've probably done about 100 webinars of some sort. So I'm starting to get out there a little bit. I also have contributed to Dr. Darren Detweiler's 2021 published book, Building the Future of Food Safety Technology, Blockchain and Beyond. And in that book, I discussed just a chapter that I contributed, but I discussed a lot about things to consider from the user perspective, of all the documentation that needs to be digitized. I'm a regular guest lecturer at Purdue University, Cincinnati State, and also at Fresno State University. I did notice on this slide as of yesterday, I need to update it because I'm not only on Land Betterment's board of directors, I also just recently joined as a strategic advisor on the advisory board for OmniBase Incorporated. And if you haven't checked them out, they're new technology emerging. They're working on commercializing. They have a 30-minute test for currently pathogens. So they're working currently with Listeria monocytogenes. So I'm super excited to be on that board as well, and look forward to seeing what they can do. Overall, my passion is bringing to food safety businesses the support that I felt when I was in a corporately managed food facility. So when I was working with Kroger or with Safeway, which is also in my background, I loved how accessible the programs were and the support was from the corporate offices to help me in the facilities. And so I love to make those programs accessible and help assist companies get their food safety programs to the same level as a large CPG and retailer, the same way they manage their programs. So that's a lot of our passion and what we do at Safe Food and Root. All right, so as I mentioned, so just our vision is to even the playing field with accessible and food safety solutions for the food and dietary supplement sectors. And we are doing this by unleashing the right people and processes in a powerful way. I've been saying a lot of my career that people don't know what they don't know. It mostly means that a majority of people are trying to do the right thing, but they don't always have the knowledge or know-how or skills. And so this is just the reality of people, behaviors and their learning curves. And in order to implement a program, you need to have the right people with the know-how to build your programs, but not just through your documentation. You need to invest in the right people, processes, and automation where it makes sense. So I'm gonna turn it to Chris real quick to manage a poll for me to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, thanks so much, Shin. So I know with today, you know, and just in general, you know, talking the quality culture, it's really important to know who our audience is. So if you could take just a minute, please fill out the survey so we can better kind of tailor the rest of the presentation to your specific roles. And we'll give it just a minute here while we're collecting responses, and then we'll close and move on. Let's see. So far, Jen, it looks like we've got about 71% of the audience is in a food safety or quality lead role. So give it just another few seconds here, and then we'll close this down. Okay.
All right.
So now we're sharing the results here. And like I said, pretty overwhelming number of food safety and quality, followed up by sales and marketing and production other.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you for filling in that poll for us. It's a little early in the webinar to capture everything, all the people. So hopefully more people join, but that does give me an idea of who's sitting here. So real quick, I'm just going to revisit a little bit of the things that we discussed in the first two series, not spend a lot of time on it, but just kind of revisit it. One of the things that I did was take the definition of culture from the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and I just like put into it some of the food safety pull food safety factors into it so that we could look at it. So I'll just read it real quick. Beliefs, social forms, and material traits of the workplace that share attitudes, values, goals, and practices. And then I added that support food safety. And these set of food safety driven values, again, adding food safety, this set of driven values are in place in every practice of the company and are an integrated pattern for all employees. And so that was, we talked about that in the first series, and we also talked about how GFSI can help with that. And GFSI has part of these five different critical content for the vision and mission that they grade you on. So these are like built into the benchmark processes. And it includes vision and mission. Again, that kind of defines the beliefs and the social forms and the material traits of the company. It also sets the goals and practices. And then people, they demonstrate the attitude and develop a consistency amongst their processes. And then values are demonstrated by the people's consistency and their adaptability to change. And then including hazard and risk in their awareness in the practices helps all employees stay consistent and focused on a food safety culture. It really does start with that vision and mission and the top-down support of the people. And I know, like, based on who is on the webinar, again, I think this was very similar to the last attendee list, that there were a lot of people on here that were in the food safety quality environment. So I'm a bit preaching to the choir, and I get that. But as you are mostly aware, that it really makes a big difference when leaders are doing a top-down approach for it. So it cannot just start with the FSQA team, the Food Safety Quality Assurance team. It has to be lived and breathed, and it needs to be a core value of the company. So that's what we talked about in part one. And then in part two, similarly, we talked about, and apologies, it is still automated. I'll jump in though, and just to share all of them, we talked about 10 different features or things that you can do to develop food safety culture and be a part of your daily strategy. So this was outside of GFSI, but it is built into all of the GFSI benchmark auto schemes. So you can do it without GFSI schemes. However, when we're talking about some of the customers that the companies might be going for to work with, those might be those larger retailers. If you're in that business, they're going to want GFSI standards to be met. So that's a part of your branding decisions, as part of your marketing decisions. You don't have to have it that way, but it is good to have GFSI for that purpose. But it really is like clear policies and procedures, training, empower your employees, foster that communication, lead by example, conduct regular audits, involve suppliers, involve technology, which we'll talk about, and then monitoring and measuring them and setting metrics, and then having a spirit of continuous improvement. All right. So quoting again, I had three quotes before. So the first one that I shared in the first one was from the first webinar in this series was from the drop-in CEO. The worst time to mitigate a crisis is when you're in the middle of one. And that's very true. And in part two, we focused on a quote that I pulled for myself was, practice makes habit. Just like any discipline in your life, habits help you be better prepared. So you practice what, you know, your habits become your practice. I just recently heard a football story about somebody making a mistake, and the coach was like yelling at them on national television about, how many times have I told you? And it just made me realize that that coach was probably yelling at that team member because they were practicing a bad habit instead of correcting it. So it's really important. But part three, we're going to focus on one of my favorite quotes from Oswald Spengler, that technology is one of those non-obvious things, and it can be a great thing. So the secret of all victory lies in the organization of the non-obvious. And I think that truly is a part of the equation for victory in food safety culture. It's obvious to do a HACCP plan and a food safety plan. It's not always obvious to companies to make it easy on everyone, to involve, you know, handling the paperwork easier. It's hard to justify that, to get like in your mind an ROI, a return on investment that makes sense. And so we're going to talk about many of those things that you can organize using software and figure out how, you know, kind of talk through some of the just various perceptions. And so perception is one of the things that I'm going to bring up first, because I think that it's just an interesting point of view that a lot of people might have. And this is a picture of Crystal Washington. I put her her page on here. Her perception in a conference I recently attended, she is a futurist, technology strategist, and an author. And she was one of the keynote speakers, and it was a great speech. But one of the things that she really honed in on, and I just thought was interesting, was how technology has become so much a part of our lives that we're nearly cyborgs as humans. And so she was just talking about how your phone has become an extension of our body. And this was very opposed. She was like, I want to be clear, we're not humanoids or androids where the computer is built first and then the human is overlaid on them. The cyborgs are humans with computers as part of their build. And I bring this up, and I think it's really an interesting way to look at it, because again, it's perception. And a lot of people have negative impressions of bringing software in or artificial intelligence or digitizing paperwork and where risks might be. And I know we all have these kind of other underlying fears built in from our television days. Like we didn't want, they didn't help us because they were like, robots are taking over. If you've watched iRobot with Will Smith, you know, like in most cases, in like the way the TV portrays it, computers are bad. You know, technology is bad, but in reality, most cases, technology has improved our way of life. And so I want us to go in with that perspective as we're thinking about software. It might be a really good controversial topic when you kind of compare the two, but I think it's a really great place to start and just level set our ways of thinking. So here are some ways that technology has improved our life a little bit. So enhanced communication. Software enables, so if you can tell where I'm starting, let me put my mouse here. So on enhanced communication. So software enables seamless communication. So remember on the vision statement, one of the comments that I said was communication. And software can help enable seamless communication through email messaging apps, through video conferencing, fostering personal work collaboration spaces. So it can help you with both of those. It can give you information access. The internet and software-based engines provide easy access to vast amounts of information, empowering us with knowledge and enabling the data-driven decisions that we need to make. And then productivity and efficiency. I'm sure all of you in the audience are familiar with some of that, where software tools streamline tasks, they automate processes, they improve time management, they increase personal and professional productivity. They give convenience and accessibility through different applications, offer convenience through online shopping, e-learning platforms, and telemedicine, just to name a few. And it takes essential services and resources accessible from anywhere. I happen to be in the know. One of my team members is online from across the globe. She's 7 hours ahead of us, and she is listening to this webinar right now. So, you know, it's a really amazing feature. Entertainment and leisure. So, of course, we look at it from a professional side, but there's also a benefit on the human side of entertainment options include streaming services, video games, social media platforms. They have all enhanced our lives in numerous ways with enjoyment and relaxation in both personal and professional spaces. And then finally, continuous improvement. So remember, again, like the list of 10 things that I mentioned in the second webinar, and in the first one, we talked about a spirit of continuous improvement, and technology can help us with that. So the conference that I mentioned that I attended was a cross-sector conference of all types of technology. So we could share our knowledge across different industries. It was really incredible, and it really helped with breaking open some of those innovative conversations that you might not think of otherwise. So that was a really great event, and it just was centered around technology, and you wouldn't think a food safety conference or anybody from food safety would want to attend a technology conference, but it was very eye-opening, all of the things, especially in the medical community. So I saw a lot of stuff that was user applicability in the medical community that could be transferred or translated over to food safety. So it was really cool. Okay, so what are the risks of not using it? Of course there are. It can come down to inefficient processes with anything. You can think of like internal training, certification management, poor supplier management, ineffective incident responses, lack of data analysis. And that's, I'm listing out a list that's completely different what you're looking at. So like human error, customer challenges, compliance violations. I'm sure we've all dealt with these where software could be something that could assist with this, even if it was something as simple as a chat bot on a website to help navigate the process and keep the customer moving forward to the right position, to the right team member. The automated voicemails, that is a program and it is set into your phone. So that we've been using technology a long time. there are risks of not using it. We've felt some of the downsides of it when it's broken or doesn't work. I mean, just this morning, I was trying to do a chat with somebody in a private type setting, and I got kicked out of the private conversation, and I couldn't get back into it. I couldn't figure out how to get back into it. And I was kicked out because software was, you know, there was a problem with it. But it still opens the door for me to be able to have conversations with people. So I'm not mad at the situation. I'm frustrated that the software didn't do what I wanted it to do, but I understand what happened, and I'm going to wait on it to get resolved. So just giving examples there, but not using it can put us in that we're taking a step back in time as well. So we want to be careful of that. So the other side of it is also regulation says so. And I've shared a lot of the new era of smarter food safety blueprint that the FDA has put out there. It's not regulation saying you have to do this yet, but they really are encouraging us and pushing us towards this as part of our food safety culture to have tech-enabled traceability. Traceability FSMA 204 is becoming in effect in a few years, and digital management of your documentation and your just any of your lot code information from farm to fork is becoming something that's really going to be difficult to manage if you don't have digital systems in place. And that you also don't have collaborative, if you don't have collaborative systems in place with your, you know, the cross, like across the supply chain. So with your retailer, you need to be able to communicate this from your suppliers and all the way through to your retailers, depending on what food types you are involved in. You also need smarter tools and approaches for prevention and outbreak responses. So they're really pushing that as well. And so the FDA has technology in place to help with recalls. They have technology in-house that is helping them identify higher risk situations so that they can do more testing. And they expect that the food industry does the same thing. So that's something that's important. There are new business models and retail modernization. All of us that are in the food industry are probably feeling that effect. Food safety culture from farm to fork is also something, again, it's what they're paying attention to. So if you notice all of these pillars on the new era for smarter food food safety, utilize technology in some form, even in food safety culture. So it's embedded, the FDA is expecting it. So we need to continue to press towards that. Okay, so Chris, I'm gonna ask you to jump in and help me with that poll question again so that we can work on results for that.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks, Jen. So let's jump in with the second of our poll questions here. What are your company's biggest obstacles to adopting new food safety culture? You can see that we have a list here for you. For some reason, if your answer is not on here and you want to write something in, and everyone on the panel, please use the questions tab for anything that you'd like to hear more about or you want some clarification on. So it looks like we got about half the vote in. Give it just another second here. Okay, so about 50% of the votes. And let's just go ahead and close this and I'll share the results now.
Interesting results. I was watching it go down, trying to see where we landed. And so it looks like we're 40% where technology is a low priority. 20% is it's too expensive. And 40% is it's just part of their continual improvement program. So it's interesting. Eclectic mix. Thank you for taking over on that. So it lends to like things that we have to consider. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on budget discussions. I know that sounds like that's a little bit of a a trouble spot, but I think these things to consider will help with that discussion so that you can find that return on investment and why you want to shift that way. So when purchasing software that may or may not integrate with existing ERP systems, enterprise resource planning, and SAP systems, which stands for systems, applications, and products and data processing. It's a mouthful, that's why everybody says SAP. When you're buying ERP and SAP systems, companies need to really carefully consider several factors to ensure a smooth integration process and maximize the value of the new software. So here are some important things to consider, and that includes the integration capabilities. Considerations that I put on here, that's on the bottom one on the left side under IT considerations. So it's assessing the software's integration capabilities and whether it provides APIs. I'm going to use a little bit of software lingo, sorry. So application programming interfaces is what API stands for. And really what they are connectors that enable some seamless communication with your systems. So if you're connecting it to ERP, if you're connecting it to SAP systems, look for these pre-built in integrations or support that allows for common integration standards. And so that's something you want to discuss in your software decisions. Data compatibility. So we're going to go up that left side on the slide. So ensuring that data formats, structures, and protocols used by the new software align with those of your existing systems. So incompatible data formats can lead to data transformation challenges during integration. So you really want to make sure your data is speaking the same language. And these are things that your IT group in your company will talk through, but it's other factors that you have to consider because that can delay the process of getting it implemented. Data security and compliance. So consider how data will be transferred between systems and whether sensitive information will be adequately protected during that integration. I mean, we're all victims of cyber breaches, major health organizations just sent me letters, like one of our insurance companies just sent us a letter that they had a data breach. These things happen all the time, and these are the places that they happen is whenever you have some kind of protection, encryption, or that sort of thing going on at this connector point. So you just want to make sure that you're meeting the compliance standards that your company has and making sure that they meet data privacy regulations in your company and that protect your customers and your employee data. Then we're going to flip to the other side for convenience, and I'm going to go bottom to top again. So customization and configuration. Determine whether the software can be customized to match your business processes and data requirements. Additionally, you can assess how easily the software can be configured to integrate again with your ERP and SAP system. So if the company's used to doing it, they have a long history of integrating, they work with large companies, they might have more capability to do that, but the cost might go up with that. So those are things to factor in. Scalability, this is huge. So evaluating whether software can handle your organization's current and future needs as it scales. So the integration should not become a bottleneck as your company grows, but also factors there of like, how much data can it manage? Is there an amount of data that it no longer can do? Does it archive things? Does it have some kind of method? Is that meeting version control requirements? There's a lot of factors in that scalability conversation. Vendor support. So check if the software has vendor support built into the integration process and whether they have experience, again, going back to, do they have experience integrating with ERP and SAP systems already? Strong vendor support can be really critical during that process. So if it's a retailer we're talking to, which I'm not sure everybody's backgrounds that are in food safety quality, but that's a big factor because if you have thousands and thousands and thousands of vendors, then that could be something that would cause difficulty in the onboarding of them to get into that new software. Then we're going to hit data flow and synchronization. So understand how data will flow between systems and how real-time synchronization or batch processes will work. So what does that mean? So that means ensuring that updates in one system are accurately reflected in real time in the other system, or understand when they sync. So I'm thinking of, like, if you are inputting lab data into some kind of software and it's speaking to your ERP system and saying this inventory is ready for approval to be, it's approved to ship, to make sure that that's in a reasonable amount of time that meets your organization's need. And to improve that factor, if you need it faster or if you want it slower, to have a better positive hold system, there's many ways that you can do that. And then not on here, it's on the next slide. So practicality. So thinking of practicality, like testing and quality assurance, change management, costs and ROI, what the return on investment, and then a long-term strategy. There's big things to consider between those and business continuity. Give me just a second. I lost my place in my notes. I want to make sure I'm speaking to the appropriate thing. So when it comes to, considering these factors, companies can make informed decisions about purchasing software and integrating it in with their ERP and SAP systems. Ultimately, that leads to a more successful implementation, and it improves operational efficiency, because you really want to make sure that you're not causing hiccups in your current processes. That's the biggest thing, and I think that's one of the biggest things, that obstacles that come up on integrating software. And I purposely have left a lot of time for questions that we may not have any, but if there's any that are going to start popping up. So I have a last poll question that's usually our last poll question, asking, if you would like Safe Food and Root to reach out to you to start talking about any of your food safety culture needs or your software needs. So that is my next slide, but I did want to open up the door a little bit, and Chris, you and I could have a little chat if we want while that poll's going, to just talk through any other factors that we might be able to talk through related to software technology. And I did that on purpose.
Thanks, Jennifer. I think you're right. I think it's a very difficult conversation, and we can see from the earlier poll results where 40% said that, right now technology is not a high priority. And, let me just provide you a cautionary tale that while in our daily lives and our role as a QA manager or, on the floor, it may not seem like the organization is looking into technology, but, they all are. So I was just at a conference last week that had some of the biggest food and beverage companies in the world. And right after the conversation just about hiring in general and, finding more qualified individuals, it kind of always centered around technology. Mm-hmm. And some of that conversation was, their suppliers, right? So Jennifer, your background, obviously being supplier quality with a company like Kroger, they've got hundreds and hundreds, suppliers. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a conversation about my supplier wants me to use some sort of track and trace technology, or, we're trying to eliminate things like counterfeiting on our really high-end, bourbons or something like that. It's definitely a conversation that's really all around the food industry right now. I think it's really important to have a voice, for the quality assurance managers on the phone to understand that, they have a voice in what sort of system is going to be used, and make sure it's as user-friendly as can be.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think, I was at, so I mentioned my background, and several years I was with Kroger, And one of the most revealing, eye-opening projects that I was on there was related to software and building up a new software tool in-house to collect supplier data. And the reason it was years in the making. So it's also, you know, when you're dealing with things like this, there are so many factors to consider. We had an entire project management team that was a integrators. There's a PMI certification where they really look at it through a lens of almost like a Gantt chart. Like you have to do this. There's a lot of dependencies. Once you do this, you have to go on to the next task and then on to the next and then on to the next. To each of them, because they're like, first we have to shut off this, connection between these two. So we have the softwares. So we have to stop and we have to import new data in to replace it. And that all has to happen. And we give it a period of time to happen. And then after that happens, we can turn it on for communication. And so like, that's a very simplified three-step kind of process. But when you looked at it on a project board, it could have had 300 tasks associated with it. And 20 different departments that we had to talk to in order to execute that. So it's, I mean, there's a lot of change management to do with people and with processes and systems. And it gets really confusing if you don't have somebody leading that. And if you don't have the voice, so that was why I was on that team, was because I was the voice of the food safety people, the food technology people. So I was one of the voices and I was the business lead on that project to be, give that lens. Because if not, you know, we know as food safety quality people, we're going to get left behind. And then all of a sudden we're having to deal with things that don't work. So that's part of that food safety culture thought pattern anyway, right? Like the FDA concept in mind, right? So
right. And, you know, and you talk about things like knowledge loss when you've got, you know, employees that have been with the company in some cases since the inception, you know, maybe employee number five, right? And they've been there for 25 years. And so much of the role and what they do is really just, it's not written down anywhere. So things like software, you know, I know that it gets a bad rap because right now everything is AI, you know, AI wants to replace us all. And, you know, I make that joke a lot internally with our teams, right? And I'm a sales guy, I'll be one of the first to go. but at the end of the day, you know, it's a lot of traceability exercises that are now being required by the schemes, whether it's a GFSI scheme, you know, things like California Proposition 12. So many of these things now have, you know, a very intricate track and trace, regulations and rules written in there. And so I think it's really important that we sort of, as a community, embrace the technology and like you said, have a voice in the implementation, how it's going to work within our teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm gonna pull it in a little bit. I don't know if anyone's asking any questions. I haven't seen any come through, but let me just double check before I say that. So I don't see any. So I'm gonna pull it in, rope in a little bit of a summary on this, like beliefs, social forms. Again, this is the summary. This is the definition I said before. Material traits that have attitudes, values, goals, and practices that support food safety. The practices is where this automation comes in. It helps support that. It helps give us that continuous stream of information flow, of communication. And so like when the software comes in to play, just having those like different, I mean, even my company as we grow, and I'm sure anyone that is sitting here that has worked with us before sees our growth, like we're constantly in a state of continuous improvement, trying to figure out how to get well-oiled machine to work even better. Like how can we shave some communication here? Can we do a button or a green light? You know, something even like a stoplight chart. So red light, green light, and then a yellow light if there's caution. And you can use those kind of tools from a, you know, something as simple as a spreadsheet. I don't recommend using spreadsheets because that data can get corrupt on you quickly, especially if it has too much there. But you could pull that into a software and have that as a dashboard to make quick, concise, fast decisions related to like what's in trouble, what do I need to focus on, what do I need to, what can I just leave alone? It's working fine. It's, you know, it's working the way it's supposed to. So it's in the green. If it's red, it needs my attention right now. It's urgent. And there's technology out there that does that with, I think about like coolers. I remember like process efficiencies. Whenever I was working at a dairy, this was back in Kroger days too, but it was in way back in my early career. I started out in one of their manufacturing plants, and they had this tool that you would look at a dashboard on your computer screen. And this was way back in 99, guys. Like, we've had this a long time. And it was basically telling me the what lines were down out of like 25 lines that were running. You know, what lines were down, why were they down? And there was inputted data that was communicating from the floor to my office to let me know that that was there. And that's part of the practices is like, okay, once you get a tool like that, how do you add that, you know, to your different methods of management and coaching that through to the rest of your team? So,
well, you mentioned coaching, and I think one thing that's also important when evaluating software tools for your business is to look for something that has some teaching tools on it. You know, things like training, because when you're talking about food safety culture and, you know, safe food culture just in general, a lot of that comes back to making sure that, you know, your team is trained and knows what they're doing. So a lot of these software tools will also have, you know, some basic training on there. Those are some of my favorites. Obviously, there are a lot of options in the marketplace. You know, I would suggest doing your due diligence and finding, of course, what's, you know, going to be the most applicable to your organization. But don't overlook the training aspect.
Right. That's a very good point. Training can be done, you know, like you can have an implementation.
I think we might have had an issue with the audio and lost Ms. Jennifer Crandall. I know that we still have a little bit of time for questions. We'll give it just a second, see if Jennifer's able to jump back in. If not, we can go ahead and close down today. And the next webinar is going to be put up on the screen here shortly. Parker, if you'll pull that up.
I'm sorry, what were you looking for me to pull up?
The future webinars. I believe our next one is going to be on October the 17th.
Sure, give me one moment. Second.
Apologize for the technical issue here.
Okay, audience view. There, I'm here. Okay. I don't know what happened. I got lost. I apologize. That was weird. I really have no idea.
Yeah, no problem at all. You know, we were just going to
difficulties.
Yeah, hey, you know what? That's why we enjoy doing these live shows. sometimes we're going to have hiccups, but you know, it's always important to be able to, yeah, you know, get questions when they come in. So, yeah, so the next webinar is going to be on October the 18th, and that is going to be SQF webinar with Tammy Van Buren. Sorry, Jen, I just wanted to jump in and talk about the next one.
You're fine. I apologize. I do want to cover a few other slides if it's okay. I think my computer just blipped for a minute, so must have been on a tangent I shouldn't have been talking about. So next webinars with Tammy Van Buren, I heard. When is that one?
That's going to be on October the 18th. And we're going to really do a year in review. That'll be a really good one. You know, I like data, so we're going to talk a lot of analytics.
Yeah. Well, let's do a quick SWOT analysis on technology with food safety culture. And this is just food safety culture first. So clear policies, procedures, like these are strengths of food safety culture. And when you do a SWOT analysis, the goal is like, so what, right? So there are really clear benefits to adopting a food safety culture. The policies and procedures can help with efficiencies and solidify your leadership commitment. They also help solidify training of employees. They promote communication. And then technological advancements are happening so quickly. Global standards such as GFSI give structure and help to build your customers' trust along with the consumer's trust. And they really help give that framework. So, like, what is the so what statement of this? It's developing a food safety culture is essential for the food industry to ensure the safety and quality of products. While there are strengths, opportunities, organizations should be aware of the weaknesses and threats. So by leveraging their strengths and capitalizing on opportunities, organizations can mitigate weaknesses and threats to build a robust food safety culture that protects consumers, enhances their reputation. That's a lot of things to, well, words to say. So let me kind of break it down. When you look at your strengths here of like, yeah, it really helps you get solid on processes, procedures, programs, training your team, your communication gets like really cleaner. And then you have all of these global standards to help build that customer trust. It comes back to not just your customers like Kroger's and Walmart's and all of those, your consumers will trust your brand name and that will help build your brand. So it feels like a very indirect return on investment, but ultimately, aren't you trying to sell your food or your product? The weaknesses though, is it can be really resource intensive. And when you look at all of the things, especially to meet like a GFSI requirement, that is really a lot of paperwork. And even being preventive controls, when you come down to some of the FDA and regulatory requirements, is really intense for the food safety quality person. That's why I keep preaching, like it can't just be that person that is in charge of it. And so, and also there's a lot of resistance to change. And then we get complacent whenever it's just checking off boxes, right? So there's a lot of weakness built into it, but we still have all these threats of emerging pathogens. We have supply chain vulnerabilities. I mentioned the reputational damage, competitive pressure, regulatory changes, recalls. You know, you can, the list goes on quite a bit. And all of us in food safety, we know that area, like we know and understand the risks here. We get nervous and we start blundering them out, but we really need to maximize as our communication to our upper management about the benefits that really fall into that opportunities sector of the SWOT analysis. So we'll talk real quick about the technology side of it. You know, strengths that we have, training and education, real-time monitoring, data-driven feedback. I've mentioned all these throughout the presentation, compliance assurance. And then I'll jump to the opportunities. It helps improve those training effectiveness. You could gamify your training. How fun is it to do the quizzes in the software so you don't have to track it all? Your attendance is done in the software. So going back to that resource intensity, you know, that you have on just food safety culture, these are things, these are tools to help you track it better. And then you can build that continuous improvement. It could give you automated reminders of this training's due on this date for this person and plug in everybody. There's lots of tools out there like that. And then it also creates this space and an opportunity for global collaboration. You can have your suppliers, your vendors, your food safety consultants, and your internal team all talking on the same tool. That's a huge collaborative space. And you can use it to send to third-party links a lot of different tools. I say it like I'm speaking of one particular one, but a lot of companies give that opportunity where you could do a shared link that gives the data to people requesting it in an inspection or an audit. However, we go back to the weaknesses. There is still a resistance to technology and that initial investment, that cybersecurity and the vulnerability I talked about earlier, and the complexity of just how to roll out a software, how to integrate it in your programs. But if you don't, it goes to those threats, right? Technological obsolescence, big word. don't be obsolete, basically. Cybersecurity risks, regulatory complexity, competitive pressures. Those, like, your competitors are doing it. If you think they're not, your competitors are big national brand companies. They're using technology. So that is definitely a threat. And when you already have space on a retail shelf or on a, it's hard for big retailers. I'm going to speak from a retailer perspective. I'm sure it's the same with wholesalers. Once you're in a system and you're continuously building and have a lot of shelf space and you're making a lot of money for that company, it's going to be very difficult to get your foot in the door if you don't have some of similar programs that they have. So it's good to invest in the technology going early into it, because you definitely don't want to get left behind. But again, like, if you are the QA person talking about it, you can talk about that part of it. It gives you a competitive advantage over your peers that are the same, place in their, in their roadmap of building their company brand bigger. So if you're a small company starting out and you're just trying to get your foot in the door and you already have some of these things in, that gets you in a competitive advantage. It says, I am thinking, forward thinking. I understand the requirements that this retailer or wholesaler has. So using that as your justification to get it, because I do feel like as food safety quality people, we tend to get doom and gloom and don't know how to share our message as well. So it's like, know your audience. Your audience wants to know this SWOT analysis of food safety culture and of your technology. So think in those terms and build your case that way. And then just in summary, again, food safety culture, it's shared values, beliefs, continuous commitment and training and communication, leadership and accountability. There's a lot of factors to food safety cultures, and technology can help you pull it all together. So I'm gonna leave it at that. Chris, are there any last minute questions or things that we wanna talk about before kind of closing it out?
No, I think this was great. Again, this was a 3-part series. You can find parts 1 and 2 on Perry Johnson Food Safety's website. You can find it on our YouTube channel and a number of different places that we stream content. Jennifer, as always, thank you so much for today, for your wisdom and, pardon the few glitches on our end. It's been great. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for playing my game, because the audience may not know that I just threw Chris into the presentation without him really realizing I was getting ready to, because I realized a conversation in the middle of it probably would make the content even more meaningful. And so I thank you for being adventurous with me and talking through a little bit more about software.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, and look forward to hosting you again.
Okay. You guys take care. Thank you, everyone. Email us if you have questions, or reach out on our website. We're happy to help you if you have any desires to work on food safety culture and technology.
Great. Thanks so much, Jennifer. Have a great afternoon.
You guys too. Bye. And then turned around and said, oh, I just found out we had somebody, and they were at an executive level. So that shows you the siloing that can happen even in a small company when you don't have everybody accessing the same tool. That's a lot. Sorry. Reach out to me if you want to talk about it more, because I have a lot of different suggestions on how to go about software.
Yeah, well, that's perfect. And it gives us a really great segue into our next webinar, part 3, the final of the series, titled How Software Helps Food Safety Culture. So hopefully any questions. That is going to be, now Jennifer, correct me if I'm wrong, Wednesday, October the 4th.
Correct. Yes, that's perfect. Right. And if anyone on this webinar has specific areas, I'm still designing that webinar at this point. So if there's any areas of interest that you want me to try to focus on, my biggest goal and reason for that webinar is to talk about how to budget it into your next, you know, in 2024 budget and why it's important to include it. But if you have things that you want suggested, just put a note in the chat and we'll, or in the questions, and just put a note in there saying this is to answer, you know, like for the next webinar, I'd like to see, you know, just put that as your phrasing. And then we'll look at that and add that to our list of discussion topics if it makes sense for us to include. It's not too granular. I want to make sure that it still meets the audience needs.
Fantastic. Well, Jennifer, on behalf of Parker and myself and everyone here at the PJR FSI family, thank you for today. And we look forward to seeing you back in 6 weeks for part three.
All right. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Again, if you need to reach out to us, all the information's on the screen. Appreciate the attendance and the study attendance all the way to the end.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great afternoon.